Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the AnvaCast, our new podcast series talking to members and stakeholders in the Anva community. My name's Ian Grossman, and I'll be your host for yet another episode. Joining me is a very special guest, Rick Holcomb, the Commissioner of the Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you, Ian. Happy to join you this morning.
Rick, you are a longtime and well-known member in the AMVA community. And I want to talk a little bit about your background and career in a few minutes. But first, I kind of want to start with, for a number of years now, you have really focused on, in Virginia, and talking to your colleagues about the general transformation in customer service in the DMV, and really positioning the Virginia DMV to not only be innovative in the traditional services, but to expand to really be the portal for government services in Virginia, and to be that one-stop shop. And I think my first question is, I'm curious to know, as you've done that over the years, did that change your positioning and preparation and ability to adapt when you had to change the way you delivered services in response to the current pandemic?
Ian, interesting question. I mean, certainly one of the great partnerships that we established was we actually are the outreach or the customer service interfacing for our division of vital records. And so we sell birth certificates, marriage, divorce, and death certificates. Came in very helpful when we were pushing Real ID up to the point. Quite frankly, it's still helping us. Obviously, our departments of health are very busy. That's another outlet that folks can get those credentials. But I can tell you the Department of Health is very pleased that we're continuing providing that service to their customers. And we still have a lot of folks coming in to get that Real ID credential, even though the federal government has extended. So it's worked well. I will tell you, some of our partnerships we've sort of put on hold as we work the backlog, because as you know, Ian, our governor had us closed for about 2 months, and we are slowly reopening. Today, we're up to 31 of our 75 offices are opened. And so we've sort of put some of those partnerships on hold temporarily, again, to get the backlog done of the folks who we haven't been able to serve for the last couple of months.
And I would imagine, you know, considering those types of innovative partnerships that you've been trying over the years, talking to a lot of the different agencies, their ability to quickly pivot to change to things that were strictly online or more appointment-based, did you find in Virginia your creativity and your always pushing your team there to try things differently? Did you feel like it was maybe easier or harder to say, okay, we're shifting again because now we've got to change the playbook a little bit unexpectedly and really with just a matter of a few days' notice?
Ian, I will tell you, and I thank you for noting our sort of progressiveness on online. That really has served us well during this pandemic, because obviously as we were closed in our physical offices, our virtual offices remained open. And as you remember, we were the first state in the country back in the late 90s to allow people to renew their driver's license online or through the mail. And that really has served us well. Matter of fact, we've got 42 transactions that can be done online. And so, you know, when I hear some of my colleagues talk about some of the things they needed to do to stand up to allow more online, we felt we were a little above, sort of a little better prepared because of everything that we could do. And quite frankly, we are open in those 31 offices by appointment only. For those types of transactions that absolutely have to be done in the customer service center. So original driver's license, titling, those things that require folks to come in. So we are still very much utilizing our online and by mail transactions to tell people, look, we're not going to be able to give you an appointment for that. You're going to have to do that online or through the mail. And have not gotten much pushback at this point from our, you know, from our customers.
And do you see this shifting at all, the next phase of the long-term vision? I mean, you've been on this steady road of, like you say, a progressive change in delivering service. Does the adjustments you're making during the pandemic, or I guess thinking about the longer lasting changes of social interaction that we may have now for some time, do you see that shifting your overall strategy for delivering services in any way?
Absolutely, Ian. I mean, the new normal, you know, we, as again, you know, we're opening limited services, obviously for social distancing. Only half of our windows are open. So in an office like Tyson's Corner that normally had 25 windows, we've got about half of those opened. And again, appointment only. Here in Richmond in our headquarters building, we've only got 8 windows open. And so that means we are serving 8 customers, and then 8 feet back from the window are 8 chairs where we've got the online, you know, where we sort of have the, you know, folks waiting on deck to be served. I'll be honest with you, the compliments that we're getting back from our customers and our employees on the appointment basis, I don't see us ever not doing appointments. Now, whether we need to open some limited for walk-ins service, that's certainly something that we'll look at as the social distancing requirements are further relaxed. But at this point, it's the new normal for us. And in fact, we've got folks who are doing different roles. You know, for instance, we have greeters who actually meet the customers out front. They confirm their appointment. They confirm that they've got the documents necessary to do the transaction. They then send them inside where information then sends them to either to the window or to the seat. We also have what we call lobby coordinators, whose their main job is after that customer leaves the window, they're coming and of course they're equipped with all sorts of PPE. But they're coming in sort of wiping down the window, wiping down those machines like iMachines, the credit card machines, signature pads, everything that's been touched by the previous customer. So we've got different roles, but at this point, you know, it's working, you know, it's working well. And I think our new normal will, that's what our new normal is going to be. I'm just not really sure we're going to go back to the days that you'd be sitting shoulder to shoulder with 200 of your best friends in a DMV lobby waiting for your number to be called. I think it's going to be far more civilized, and you're going to be having your appointment, and you're going to be in and out in very quick order.
Yeah, so it's really interesting that this, you know, unexpected emergency has really shifted the things, and we sometimes find things, oh, this actually is a better way to do it. You mentioned the staff that is taking on new roles and responsibilities. Again, I'm really fascinated at the speed of which we've had to pivot to do those certain things. And so how are you able to roll that out to a staff that, you know, is so used to standard operating procedures, having their role, having their responsibility, and say, okay, now I need you to put on this PPE and do this role that maybe you never thought you would be in before. Tell us about how that rollout occurred.
Well, Ian, first of all, let me tell you, I'm blessed by having you know, the best employees of any state agency anywhere. And they are always looking on how we can do something better, quicker, and serve the customers in a better way. So certainly they were used to seeing hundreds of people in the lobby and not a whole lot of no social distancing, no barrier between the customers and the the customers and our employees. So when they came back into the office and they saw that we had put Lexan, which is a high grade of plexiglass shields between the customer and between our employee, the fact that we'd issued the PPE, the fact that we'd removed almost all the chairs from the lobby, and we're controlling, you know, who comes in and the transactions that are done. Our employees our employees were excited about the changes, and they certainly saw our commitment to ensuring their safety, the customer's safety. And quite frankly, the customers are a lot happier because if you've got an 8:15 appointment, you come at 8:05, you're at the window at 8:15, and you're out the door at probably 8:45. And so, you know, they're ecstatic, and that happiness is being shared with our customer service reps. So that's, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And when our employees walk back into the office, because we have them come in a week early before the office actually opens to test all the equipment. And when they came in and they saw downstairs all but eight chairs, only three of the test machines being being used. And right now we're not doing, you know, skills tests for regular passenger vehicles. Though I will tell you, probably by the end of this month, we will be following South Carolina, Pennsylvania, Maryland on the protocol that they're using to safely administer a skills test. And so our employees are pretty excited that we are so committed to their safety and to the customer safety as well.
That's great. You mentioned not doing passenger tests, which leads me to another topic I wanted to discuss with you briefly, is you were pretty vocal early on about finding ways to maintain services for the CDL community. You were one of the first states to start talking with FMCSA about waivers and exemptions and come up with new approaches to continuing to deliver CDL-related services. Share with us, Rick, why that jumped so high on your list of priorities as you were shifting your business models.
Obviously, Ian, the movement of people and freight, particularly during a pandemic, is extremely important. And, you know, being closed and not being able to give skills tests, and certainly, again, the new normal of getting in, it's impossible to maintain social distancing if you're in the front seat of a truck. Let me tell you, Ian, I'm always so amazed, and I always love your presentation. Yeah, we do that. And I think the next time we hear that, you're going to be saying a whole lot of things in addition to what AMV normally does. But putting together those calls with the states and with FMCSA to determine how we could safely give skills tests to our CDL customers was fabulous. And let me tell you, we took what Minnesota was doing and presenting on those calls, what Iowa was doing, what Kansas was doing, sort of put our own special spin on it, presented that, as you said, to FMCSA. They've signed, you know, off on it. I think the last count, we've done close to 100 of these tests. The applicants like it. Certainly our examiners like it. And then we took the next step. As you know, we've got a great remote testing partnership through Ademia with every high school in the state of Virginia. And we asked FMCSA to let us take our third-party testers who are currently doing the skills test and let us use our remote testing to let them do the knowledge as well. And FMCSA gave us permission to do that. We've done probably about a dozen, seeing about a 60% pass rate. And so another wonderful partnership. And quite frankly, AMVA provided the vehicle to communicate our concepts and our thoughts with FMCSA. And we could not be where we are in offering good, safe skills and knowledge testing without AMVA's involvement. So I want to thank Ann and you and all the great staff who really worked so hard to make this happen. Let me also tell you, we didn't do appointments in our CSCs before the pandemic. And so we reached out through AMVA, and let me tell you, my colleagues in Michigan were wonderful in sharing what they did, even sharing the product that they used. And it was a product that one of our vendors had. And we could not have stood up our appointment system in the 3 weeks that we did it without having a wonderful partnership with another state that happened because of ANVA. So we're excited of providing new avenues, new protocols to test, but we could not have done it without ANVA's assistance.
Well, Rick, I really appreciate that shout out, and I know the staff will love hearing it as well, especially on this new podcast. I'll make sure everyone knows about that, and really thanks you for that support, which really raises an interesting question. Listening to that last answer, and you talk about the role that ANVA played, talking to other states, talking to the federal partners. You mentioned an industry partner in there as well. It's interesting that at this time where our traditional way of getting together through our in-person conferences, of course, are all put on hold. And yet in many ways, this emergency has brought a closeness and interactivity to the community that we maybe wouldn't have expected. And I would wonder, someone like yourself that, you know, you mentioned before the 90s, you've been part of the fabric of this community since the 90s. Any observations, compare and contrast of how the community is coming together to help each other right now, even when our traditional way of being together is been pressed on a pause button?
Ian, let me, absolutely. You know, as you know, Ann and you and the great staff, every Monday host a call with the jurisdictions, because obviously this is impacting our Canadian members just as much as it is our American members. And I just make sure that I am free for that hour that Ann has the call, because there is not a meeting or call that goes by that we haven't, we don't have some type of follow-up. Let me tell you what Kevin Swayo is doing in South Carolina, and Kurt is doing in Pennsylvania, and Chrissy Neiser in Maryland. As I said earlier, we are going to be implementing that model, that protocol to do skills testing. We would not have even thought about something like that without hearing other states, particularly the commissioners that I respect so much, saying that, yeah, this is what we're doing, and this is why it's right, and this is why we're comfortable in doing it this way. So, I would not miss one of those calls. I usually have several people in the room listening with me to follow up. Let me tell you, I'm sending my assistant commissioner up to Maryland to go to one of Chrissy Neiser's offices to see physically how they're doing the skills test. So, yes, we're all in this together, and ANVA is providing the vehicle by which we can share concerns, we can share victories. We can really make it through this because of the unanimity that we're all working towards.
So, Rick, we mentioned a couple times how you've been part of the community since the 90s. I don't know that we keep records on these things, but I would imagine if we did, you probably have the record for most governors of being a DMV commissioner for. If my gut instinct is correct, I could be wrong, but you're probably up there. Not many folks know, necessarily your background or history and how you got into the DMV business in the 90s. Will you share a little bit of that story with our listeners?
Sure, Ian. And I'd been working up on Capitol Hill, worked both on the Senate side and the House side, ended my House career as a chief of staff for a member from Georgia. And then a good friend of mine actually got elected governor in Virginia, George Allen, at that time. You know, he'd been a local delegate when I had been chief of staff for a Virginia member of Congress. He then succeeded that member in the House of Representatives. And when he got elected governor, he actually asked me to come down and do the DMV job. And my answer to him was, "You're kidding," because all I knew about DMV was how to spell it. But from day one, we started moving things forward. And it's a wonderful feeling. And in fact, I served two governors. And in Virginia, we have our governors are limited to one term. So I served two governors, and I went up into the private sector, the American Trucking Association, and always sort of missed being involved in DMV and the DMV community, and came back in 2010 with a new governor. I'm now on my fifth governor, and have been honored to serve governors of both parties. But Ian, the bottom line is every day I can make a difference. I, supported by my great staff, can make a difference in the lives of over 8 million Virginians. And so it's a great gig. You know, I plan to keep doing it as long as, and I guess governors keep reappointing me until I get it right. But it's been a joy. And I mean, obviously, during this pandemic, you know, experience leadership was totally necessary, because we really had to reinvent DMV. And I think at the end of this, we're going to be so much stronger in how we provide service to our citizens.
Well, it seems to almost be a constant reinvention. I think, you know, your story probably tells that more than most, having done multiple tours and constantly innovating and changing. There is no, you know, we talk a lot about the new normal, but I guess the reality is there really is no normal, because we're always trying to reinvent and adapt to the changing times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just we had to be very inventive with what's going on with the pandemic. And of course, the economic crises that the pandemic has created also has us looking at, are there things we're doing that we can't afford to continue to do? Or do we need to do it in a better way to save money and make the service, you know, even better for our customers? So, there's no ability to sit back on your laurels and celebrate past victories, because things are constantly changing.
Yeah, I think we had the pleasure of, for those that are listening, may not know, Rick served as the chair of the ENVA board of directors about 5 years ago now. It's hard to believe it's been that long, 2015, 2016. And I think we all got that front seat ride to, you know, yeah, it's, things are good. It could always be better. And I think you've done that for so many of us, Rick, and I really appreciate
that. I appreciate that, Ian.
So thanks for joining us today, Rick. We'll likely have you back again sometime in the future, because there's so many topics to talk about. Want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, for bringing you this AmvaCast, and we'll look forward to all our listeners visiting with us on another edition of the AmvaCast. Take care, everybody.
Great. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.